In today's episode of Maine Coast Doc Talk, we're going to be discussing a recent study that came out highlighting data that suggests we have a weakening Gulf Stream in the Atlantic Ocean. My guest, David Reed Miller of the Gulf of Maine Research Institute, said something in our conversation that I want to highlight at the top of the episode, though. There's still a lot that we don't know about our oceans and what the drivers are for productivity, nutrient transfer, and the health of the ecosystem. This past summer, the summer of 2023, we had massive quantities of fresh water running into the Gulf of Maine from the many large rainstorms that hit us this year. That fresh water and the nutrients with it may or may not have caused a massive algal bloom of this nasty brown algae that was all over the inshore fishing grounds. I mention this because even while we focus on the Gulf Stream in this podcast, there are a multitude of local, regional, and global changes that are directly impacting the Gulf of Maine. All of these changes can make it hard to identify the specific thing that is causing a disruption or observation, and in most instances, it isn't one thing that is shifting, but many things all at once, creating uncertainty around the story that we're trying to tell to make it all make sense. Regardless of this clarifying statement, though, the Gulf Stream changing, weakening, widening will undoubtedly have an impact locally. This study is one piece of a very complex puzzle that seems to be getting harder to understand even as we learn more about our oceans. I want to finish this opening monologue with a bit of a self-serving statement. We don't have enough data to understand what's happening to our oceans, and fishermen represent an amazing opportunity to collect information and observations from those who are on the water the most. Most fishermen have years of experience as naturalists, curating data in their heads so that they can adjust their businesses in real time to respond to what's happening in the ecosystem. We need real and impactful investments in data collection that include fishermen now, so that we can better see the murky picture and build a future that's ready for what opportunities lie ahead, because there will be opportunities if we build a future that's ready for it. Now, onto my interview with David. Today, I'm joined by David Reed Miller of the Gulf of Maine Research Institute. David was hired as their inaugural Climate Center Director in 2020 to help communities respond and understand climate change. So I've asked David to join us today on Doc Talk to help me understand what is happening with the Gulf Stream in the Atlantic Ocean, and then why that matters to the Gulf of Maine. So David, thank you for joining us today to talk me through this new study that's come out of Woods Hole. But before you start educating me on the Gulf Stream, can you talk to me a little bit about the Climate Center at GMRI and what you're doing there and the broader goals of what GMRI is doing in the climate world?
Yeah, for sure. Well, first and foremost, thanks for the invitation. You know, we look to deliver collaborative solutions to global ocean challenges. And we're really focused on four global ocean challenges. First and foremost, we would say is climate change, but also healthy ocean ecosystems, sustainable seafood, and a thriving regional blue economy. And within the context of the Climate Center, we sort of recognized several years back that there was climate-related work going on across the organization, and we really needed a way to kind of tie that together, integrate it, and kind of elevate its not only its visibility, but also its impact in communities. And so they brought me on board to not only do that, but also to think about what new areas we might be able to, you know, kind of have that broader community impact. And so one of the things I have really prioritized is bringing our work onshore a bit more. You know, so much of what GMRI may be known for is our work in the open ocean, characterizing, you know, the marine food web, fisheries management process, all that sort of stuff, which is critically important, obviously, to this region. But part of what I wanted to do was say, okay, well, how do all those changes that are happening in the Gulf of Maine itself affect both shoreside infrastructure, coastal communities, and the people that, frankly, live, depend on, and recreate in the coastal zone? And so we're doing that through kind of what we call a science engagement solutions framework, really aligned with what GMRI has always historically done, bringing the best available science to bear on kind of emergent issues that are facing blue economy stakeholders.
And what is your background that you came to the Gulf of Maine Research Institute with?
Yeah. So I'm an atmospheric chemist by training. So I'm an air pollution guy. So not a fisheries ecologist. And I made that very clear in my interview process. But it's been a ton of fun, frankly, to learn so much since I've been here. But so that's my training, you know, PhD scientist, but realized that a career in research wasn't something that I was all that interested in, and really wanted to apply that scientific knowledge and understanding to societal challenges, and in particular, climate change. And so for better or worse, moved to Washington, D.C. after grad school and spent a decade there working at kind of that nexus of climate science and policy in the Senate, at the State Department, and ultimately in the White House across both the Obama and Trump administrations before coming here.
Well, we are very thankful and happy to have you working on this in Maine. It's been a pleasure to be able to work with you on a couple of different projects with the Maine Coast Fishermen's Association and GMRI, thinking about climate change and especially, you know, our working waterfronts and coastal communities. So yeah, thanks. Thanks for coming to Maine.
Thanks for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
Yeah. So let's transition to this study out of Woods Hole and the Gulf Stream. And before we start talking about this study that indicated that the Gulf Stream is weakening and moving, what is the Gulf Stream? Why does it matter so much to the Atlantic, the Gulf of Maine, right, and even like the world climate, right? Like, yeah, this is a big deal.
Yeah. So, you know, there are these major ocean currents around the world, right? The Gulf Stream is part of this much broader system called the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, which rolls right off the tongue, or what we call AMOC, right? And that is this broad entire ocean basin system that basically brings warm tropical water up along the eastern seaboard of North America, across kind of the North Atlantic, where it sinks down to the bottom, transporting heat over to Northern Europe. And then as it sinks, it becomes cooler and you get kind of this kind of circulation pattern across the entire basin, right? And so the Gulf Stream is just one sort of leg of that AMOC circulation. It is hugely important for weather and climate, frankly, across the entire Northern Hemisphere, but especially along the Eastern Seaboard and Northern Europe. And yeah, it transports a ton of heat, both in the ocean water itself, but also in the air above it, all along the East Coast and certainly across the Atlantic into Northern Europe. And so it's a reason why if you go to a similar latitude in Northern Europe, the temperature is much more mild than that same latitude in Canada. And it's because of the Gulf Stream.
So the Gulf Stream is essentially a river of water within the ocean that is moving warmer water and energy from the equator in our direction north, right? And along those lines, that transfer of energy and heat is powering a lot of the movement of other currents that are moving in and out of places like the Gulf of Maine. Am I understanding that like network correctly there?
You stated it better than I did, Ben. Yeah, it's
perfect.
Great.
Like we've got this thing that's moving energy, ocean water. There are times that like little eddies form on it and they show up in the Gulf of Maine and suddenly you get weird southern species that pop up in lobster traps. It's cool. But so that's where my like understanding ends. And this study came out that got a lot of publicity around that it's weakening. Right. So this was the first time that they really had some concrete evidence, I think, to show that it was getting weaker. And so what does that mean when a current is weakening in this scale that they're talking about here?
Yeah, it can mean a couple of different things. But in particular, what it means is the flux of water is decreasing. Right. So the volume of water passing a given area at any given time is decreasing. Right. It's slowing down. And there's a variety of reasons for that, you know, one of which is the rapid melting of the Greenland ice sheet, injecting a bunch of fresh water into the North Atlantic. Same thing can be said about what's happening with glaciers in Canada, injecting fresh water into the Labrador Current and impacting it. So all these things are kind of slowing down the Gulf Stream in a sense. And we're just starting to get some observational evidence that is happening. And you know, part of the consequence of that then is that you think in a sense, it's almost like putting a dam in a stream, right? Or like a rock in a stream. The water is going to spread out a little bit more, right? And that's exactly what we're starting to see, is that the water of the Gulf Stream, as it slows down a bit, is starting to kind of shift from the analogy I use is kind of a garden hose, right? You mentioned that, you know, it's kind of a river in the ocean, right? Whereas historically, the Gulf Stream has always been set to like the jet setting on a garden hose. But what's happening in a warmer world is that it's almost like we've turned that nozzle to the shower setting. So it's more of a broader stream. And that's part of what this, some of this study has shown, is that this Gulf Stream is not only meandering closer to the coast, but it's widening. This, and there have been other studies, and we can talk about them, that have shown that the influence of the Gulf Stream in the Gulf of Maine in particular has actually started to increase as well over time.
So walk me through that, because one of the things that we had heard in some other pieces of work around climate change was a strengthening Gulf Stream might be bringing more warm water north, right? But it sounds like what you're saying is a widening and a weakening of the Gulf Stream might also be bringing that warmer water into the Gulf of Maine. From your perspective, what are we experiencing in the Gulf of Maine at this point that we need to be thinking about closer to home?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really important to be perfectly candid with your listeners that, you know, this is, there's still a lot that we don't understand about this ocean system, right? But what we do know is that some of these changes are occurring. And one of the things we're starting to see is more of an influence of the Gulf Stream in the Gulf of Maine. Now, to be clear, that doesn't mean that the Gulf Stream is coming into the Gulf of Maine. That's not what's happening, right? You mentioned earlier kind of these eddies, right? These kind of small curls of current and water that kind of break off of the Gulf Stream. Those, what we call warm core rings, are becoming more frequent intruders into the Gulf of Maine, if you will. And in particular, what's happening is that they're coming in at depth through the Northeast Channel more than anything. You know, with the Gulf of Maine, we've got this really unique topography because of the Georges Bank. And so you've kind of got that deep inlet of the Northeast Channel that provides much more connectivity to the open ocean and to the Gulf Stream itself. And so it provides a bit of a conduit, if you will, for this Gulf Stream influence. And so that's really what's starting to happen a lot more. I'd be remiss if I didn't highlight, however, the additional factor here, and that's the more dominant in many ways other large-scale ocean current in our region, which is the Labrador Current. The Labrador comes down from the Arctic, and part of it kind of wraps around the Grand Banks in Newfoundland, and the Arctic is warming rapidly, and so the water in the Arctic is also warming. And so that historically pretty cold water is also becoming warmer, right? And so we're not only seeing a greater influence from the Gulf Stream, but the cold influence that we did have is less cold than it has been.
Interesting. There's not one problem. The cold water is not as cold. The warm water is maybe it's not as concentrated, right? But it is, there's more warmer water potentially moving into areas like the Gulf of Maine or spreading out along this area. The piece that I was trying to understand is this is transferring energy and it's dissipating that energy out over a wider area. Does that start to change some of those other currents in the Gulf of Maine? You know, we have the Labrador coming in, but there are a lot of currents that we have to track and monitor in the Gulf of Maine when it comes to like larval sediment, when it comes to movement of ocean currents and sediments and the nutrients, right? The movement of energy and the nutrients associated with that energy is really interesting in the Gulf of Maine. It's what makes it such a productive ecosystem. Where are you guys in understanding and thinking about what's being disrupted in that space of our Gulf of Maine?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think it'll be a little bit of an unsatisfying answer because I think the jury's still out in a lot of ways, right? There's a couple different factors at play. If you have, you know, go back to basic physics, right? If you have these warm core rings that we talked about coming in at depth through the Northeast Channel, right? Ultimately, that warm water is going to want to get to the surface. And so in a sense, that's going to bring up that nutrient-rich water from depth to the surface and help with kind of stimulating life, right? At the same time, we're heating up the surface water, right? Because of atmospheric warming and everything else. And so that heating up of the surface water, you've got warm water aloft, and that's going to increase what we call stratification, right? And so basically the layering of the ocean. And so that inhibits mixing. And so what dominates in any given season, any given year, any given place in the Gulf of Maine, I think is still really an active area of investigation. But those kind of multiple factors are at play in terms of driving nutrient availability, just from a physical oceanography standpoint, to say nothing of, you know, the biological oceanography and everything else at play.
So thank you for that answer. That was a great avoidance. So good job, scientist. But the piece of this that is scary, big picture, right, is in association with this report and study, there's been other things that have been basically saying the Gulf Stream is shutting down, right? And, you know, somebody put out a number of like, it might shut down within the next 50 years, right? And what does that mean? And what does a shutting down of a current mean? And what is, like, is that real or is that hyperbolic extremism of like where this could end up if everything bad were to kind of culminate?
Yeah, this is one of those unfortunate instances of kind of lost in science translation, right? So if I were to say to you, ice sheet collapse, you know, most people would probably think of calving into the ocean, right? And it literally collapsing into the ocean. What a scientist typically means from ice sheet collapse is that we've reached a point of irreversibility where that ice sheet is going to melt into the ocean over the course of hundreds, if not thousands of years. It's a very different issue for humanity to grapple with. Similarly, if the Gulf Stream or AMOC were to shut down, you know, yeah, that would have horribly dire consequences for people in the US, Canada, Northern Europe. People have probably seen The Day After Tomorrow.
Humanity, know. I think, yeah, right? Exactly. I saw that movie. I know what happens. It's not good.
Exactly,
it's not
right. good. But, you know, that movie basically took what would happen over, you know, centuries or millennia and condensed it into basically 90 minutes of highly gripping cinema, right?
Let's not say highly gripping. All right. It was not great.
Moderately.
But, yeah, okay. Moderately. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, look, I think the concerning part about this is that there is some irreversibility here, right? And so even if we were to reduce greenhouse gas emissions globally to zero tomorrow, these changes in the ocean system, because there's such a lag in the ocean response to changes in the Earth system, we're locked into some of these changes for centuries and millennia to come. And so I don't think we need to worry. This is my personal opinion, but I think it's shared by a large, probably majority of climate scientists. We don't need to worry about the AMOC shutting down per se in our lifetimes, even our great-great-grandchildren's lifetime. What we do need to worry about is a continuing slowdown of it and an increase in the types of impacts we're already starting to see.
That is a less dramatic outcome. Still negative, not great.
Still negative, right. But yeah.
But, you know, not the end of the world as we know it right now. That being said, are there any potential positive outcomes of this for, selfishly, our region? Are there things that if we're looking at this and we're saying, all right, there's a lot of half empty glasses out there, but what's the full side of this? And how should we be, you know, talking about this and thinking about this for our communities, for our fishermen? Is there reasons to be optimistic and there's things that we should be thinking about in that side?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's an issue that a lot of climate scientists in particular don't like to talk about, the benefits of global warming sometime, right? And to be clear, we are fortunate to live in the mid-latitudes, right? It's going to be a much different story for people in lower latitudes in the tropics. And I just want to be very clear about that. Us in the mid-latitudes, we have a little bit more buffering capacity, if you will. You know, we're still going to experience a lot of sea level rise as a result of warming waters. But what we're also going to see is potentially new market opportunities for commercial fishermen, right? And so the introduction of new species into this region, whether that's black sea bass, longfin squid, you know, there's a whole host that we probably haven't even seen yet or just starting to see that could really provide economic opportunity, potentially growing recreational fishing industry that we don't really have as much here, but we do see a lot more of in the mid-Atlantic and in the Southeast and Gulf of Mexico. So there is opportunity. I think the important thing for all of us is to sort of not only stay attuned and not be so kind of wed and committed to historical precedent, but to understand that change is happening and recognize that if we want to remain competitive for decades and generations to come, that we need to have the openness and willingness to adapt what we do. And part of that, to be clear, is an evolution of our management process. And you know, you mentioned that we work on some projects together. One of them is thinking about more of a dynamic permitting regime to provide access to fishermen to these newly emergent species here.
David, I really appreciate you taking some time to walk me through this study and find a little bit of optimism and hope in there. It's always scary when you're doing some doom scrolling late at night and there's another reason that the world's going to end. But yeah. I do think that sharing as much information with the folks on the water, our fishermen, our communities is crucial. And that's why I'm so thankful to have you and those at the Climate Center and GMRI helping distill it down. So thanks for taking some time today and walk me through this.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. And a huge thanks to everybody at MCFA for being such great partners with us through the years.
To learn more about the study from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute that inspired this podcast, the Climate Center at the Gulf of Maine Research Institute, or our guest, David Reed-Miller, you can visit our blog where we have helpful links, graphics, and other information to accompany this podcast. Maine Coast Dock Talk is a project of the Maine Coast Fishermen's Association, an industry-based nonprofit working to identify and foster ways to restore the fisheries of the Gulf of Maine and sustain Maine's fishing communities for future generations. To learn more about MCFA or to make a donation to support our work, you can visit our website, mainecoastfishermen.org.